Thank you for joining Cholangio Heroes, a video podcast produced by the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. I'm Jennifer Weaver, the Director of Communications, and I'll be hosting this episode with special guest Samantha Pear. She has been connected to the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation just recently, so I'm going to turn over the time to her to tell us about herself and her connection.
Hi, my name is Samantha Pear, and I was connected to the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation because of my dad. So in February of 2020, my dad was diagnosed with cholangiocarcinoma, and we had a very, very challenging year, and he fought very hard with all kinds of treatments. And lucky enough, I was the one who was able to drive him and take him to each of those appointments. But he passed away in February of 2021. And following that, I decided to reach out and get involved in the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. I'm currently a master's of public health student with an emphasis in applied epidemiology, and I needed an internship. And so I figured, what better way than to find a way to have that sense of healing and, you know, work through that grief with also completing some of my educational requirements as well. So I've done some research as well as some writing for the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation, and I've stayed on as a volunteer ever since.
And we are so happy that you have, because you've actually co-authored an article that is very informative about some of the barriers that cholangiocarcinoma is bile duct cancer. And so those who are listening, see, I even how that came about. I think you also had it accompany a poster. So if you wouldn't mind kind of telling us, go over the title of it again and tell us how that came about.
Sure. So we specifically looked at some of the barriers that cholangiocarcinoma patients are facing as they're trying to enroll in clinical trials. So first, what we did is we looked at some patient level data through a survey that was done at the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation annual conference about a year ago. And so we looked at that data, and we were able to see all kinds of epidemiological characteristics. But we looked specifically at biomarker testing and clinical trial enrollment. And so these are patients that had a portion of their lesion or tumor biopsied. It was tested against any drugs that are known to be successful if any of their genes or their biomarkers were present in their tumor. And then also the other side of that is the clinical trial portion. If any of these patients are able to participate in a phase one, phase two, or even phase three clinical trial, which is something, it's more of an experimental trial or medication that is provided to patients. And there are all kinds of inclusion and exclusion criteria. So principal investigators and physicians, oncologists are essentially trying to deem each of these medications a safe and viable option for these cholangiocarcinoma patients. However, it does take quite a bit of testing, which is where the clinical trial comes in. And so we looked specifically at how many people are enrolling in clinical trials, and if they're not able to, what is the reason that they're not able to? Is it the size of the mass? Is it because of a treatment that they have already taken, whether it be an immunotherapy or a chemotherapy that had been completed previously, or if there were any comorbidities that were preventing these patients from enrolling in a clinical trial? So that's specifically what we looked at in hopes of a couple of different things. First, of course, providing education to patients and even clinicians in the medical world. And so they're able to learn the importance of educating patients upon diagnosis, all of the treatment options, even these clinical trials, because the way we're able to get them FDA approved and take them to market is if they show success amongst enough patients. And so that was essentially the overall goal and synopsis of both the poster presentation as well as the article.
And just to let our viewers know, the article is called Barriers for Trial Enrollment in Cholangiocarcinoma Patients. I'm glad that we actually have a banner over that helps people who are actually watching this. But viewers that are out, or listeners, excuse me, that are out there, they can definitely find it. Not only in the Journal for Clinical Oncology, but it is going to be coming out again in the Conquer magazine, the June edition. So people can also find it there. And then we'll also have a link on the foundation page. But that article, when you talked about barriers, can you identify just a few for our listeners? What barriers? Because I think it doesn't just face cholangiocarcinoma patients, but I think people understanding what the barriers could be would be helpful.
Absolutely. So there are all kinds of barriers. And for every single clinical trial, there are pages and pages and pages of consent forms that need to be filled out. And part of those, within those pages, are the inclusion and the exclusion criteria. And that could be anything. It could be that the investigator is looking for patients of a specific age or, a specific type of cancer or a specific localized area where that cancer might lie. So there are all kinds of different clinical trials for different conditions. But specifically, some of the barriers or some of the reasons that our patients were not enrolled in these clinical trials were due to the sizing. If there was a specific amount of growth or if there was any spread to other parts of the body. Sometimes those were characteristics that would not be met to be a part of the clinical trial. If there were specific treatments that were done prior, I know sometimes participating in certain chemotherapy regimens will not allow for patients to participate in clinical trials. Other than that, there are certain conditions that that go along with cholangiocarcinoma that are wanted to be avoided as well. So certain autoimmune disorders, whether the diagnosis be before or after cholangiocarcinoma, there are times that those patients will be excluded as well.
I see. Was accessibility a problem? Just people not knowing?
I think that that's part of the problem as well. I think that there is a huge importance for educating patients and providing all of the treatment options prior. And I know that a lot of the cholangiocarcinoma oncologists are phenomenal at what they do, and they're extremely supportive in providing each of those options. But being able to provide options and be able to say, you know, if you go this route may not be a possibility down the road. And so if, you know, a certain chemotherapy does not prove to be successful, then that might eliminate clinical trial options. And sometimes that is the best clinical path. But I think that being able to identify that and understand that is very important. And one other part of that is making sure that patients are getting their genomic testing done or their molecular testing. So that is when that tumor is biopsied, tested against some of its genomic makeup, and to see if there are any specific drugs or medications or treatments that might prove to be successful based on that genetic makeup. And I think sometimes not every patient is able to receive that biomarker testing. So a lot of physicians will push for it, but if not, and that's not an option, sometimes in more rural areas or depending where your hospital or location of treatment is located, making sure that these patients are able to advocate for themselves and caregivers advocate for patients as well, to really push for that testing, that biomarker testing, if it is an option.
Yeah, I actually like that you said it in different ways, because it's referred to several different ways: genomic testing, biomarker testing, and it's actually the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. Awesome. Okay. And then I was just going to ask you, if you wouldn't mind, you lived this with your father.
I did.
What did you experience just personally in having your father get biomarker testing? What did he get matched with some clinical trials? Could you just share a little of your experience?
Absolutely. So our entire experience is very unique, and I didn't really take on any of these, you know, scientific or research role during my dad's illness. It was more so afterward. However, coming from a public health background, there were certain things that I was able to understand. And so my dad started with a chemotherapy regimen, and he completed, I believe it was, I'm not going to remember how many cycles of that, but it was 18 weeks of chemotherapy. And he did quite well until he was facing some challenges with his kidney and his and how it reacted to the chemo. So we switched from chemotherapy to immunotherapy. And then he had some complications with that as well. And so after both of those regimens, we actually had biomarker testing done in the beginning and then done again once we faced some of those complications. And so initially there was not a match to a clinical trial based off of my dad's staging and all of that. He had a rare hybrid cancer. And so it was a little bit of a challenge to properly be matched to a clinical trial. After immunotherapy, there was one option that one of his oncologists had really pushed for. And he did all kinds of blood tests and scans to make sure and see if it could be a possibility. But unfortunately, after some of those treatments that he had already participated in and just the timing of his cancer progression, we were not able to participate in a clinical trial. So, you know, with the personal component as well, obviously I want to push for all patients to be able to have every option to treatment that they're able to, and one that is safe for them, and one that will hopefully be successful as well.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to your family. Just courageous, because you went after everything, personalized or not. I just commend you. And I'm sure your dad is just really, really proud of you, because I know the foundation has learned a lot from the research that you've done. Could you tell us what your next steps are?
What's your future? So I only have one semester left of my master's in public health. And I'm looking to stay on in any capacity that I can with the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. So my hope is that we're able to do a little bit more research with some more of the surveys that were taken at this year's annual conference. And some of our next areas that we're looking to dive a bit deeper into are autoimmune disorders and their relationship with cholangiocarcinoma, physical activity, and as well as nutrition. So looking at some surveys that were conducted and based on our results, see if there are any connections that we're able to find. Who knows what that article might look like, but I'm hoping that we'll find out that, you know, staying active or eating certain foods will either help with symptoms or is a great preventative measure to take. And that, you know, really making sure to prevent some of those autoimmune disorders, prior to their diagnosis as well. So, through my public health background, I've learned how important prevention is. And so doing as much research as I can to understand it more, and be able to share some of my work, with the remainder of the community, so everyone is hopefully able to benefit.
What a worthy endeavor. I really appreciate that you're doing that, because, you know, a lot of preventative care, we don't really know yet. I mean, there isn't anything out there that is like a mammogram or something like that for early detection. But some of the symptoms that it would be great to just share with everybody who's listening and watching are very common, and they're related to other type of medical conditions. Could you share, do you know the symptoms? I know a few, but
a couple. And I know that, I mean, there are just, you know, certain symptoms that point to cancer in general, specifically cholangiocarcinoma. I'm not sure, but I know weight loss is a common one. Abnormalities and appetite is sometimes one as well. Sometimes skin irritation, sometimes coughing. I know it really just depends on the person, but I think it's very important that if anyone is experiencing anything that's out of the norm and not something that they're used to feeling, it's important to take some time and meet with any sort of primary care physician that you might have or any specialist that you meet with regularly, just to make sure that it is normal and, you know, get tested as much as possible. I know that, like you mentioned, mammograms, sometimes it takes getting your skin checked, colonoscopies. There are some testing options for prevention, but it's not always that foolproof, unfortunately.
Yeah, especially for cholangiocarcinoma. I know some other symptoms specifically for cholangiocarcinoma is itchy skin or yellowing of the eyes and, you know, dark urine or light stools. So that's something that we want people to be aware of, and also direct them to cholangiocarcinoma.org. We have a lot of support and resources and information. So those who are interested in learning more about this rare cancer, that actually, I think it's diagnosed, yes, in about 10,000 American each year. Unfortunately, that rate is increasing and in younger people. So please head over to cholangiocarcinoma.org or simpler, curecc.org. It's not as hard to say as I tried to say it earlier. I still stumble over it, but we're really, really grateful for you, Samantha, to take the time to talk about some of the barriers that cholangiocarcinoma patients may be facing, but also how they can overcome those barriers.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate being able to share a little bit about the article. And I hope that everyone has the opportunity to read it, listen to the podcast, and of course, reach out with any questions that they may have.
Great. Thank you again. Everybody else listening, watching, please join us next week for a new episode of Cholangio Heroes.